have my humor. It worked so well for me.
Oh yeah, I loved your show. As soon as I was listening, I'm like, oh my God, these are like my people.
When I started using computers, there are only about a dozen computers in all of New York City. Now we all carry multiple computers in our pockets and our belts.
Is AI becoming too extra?
Fuse it with exquisitely intelligent software, vastly greater than our intelligence today.
Hooked into everything, a new order of intelligence.
It feels like it's a real person. I think that's kind of where it's going.
They look human, very hard to spot.
They could only accept it in terms of magic. Well, perhaps it is magic.
Welcome, welcome, everyone. I am Stinkin' Machines Kennedy, and this is Chaos Magic News, now with 10 times the amount of AI-generated content. It has been quite a while, but we are back with another interview, and boy, are we excited for it for multiple reasons. So, without further ado, totally not reading stuff out of the book, definitely not doing that. Dave Zilla has been in the occult for over four decades. By day, he's an illustrator and an AI instructor. He's worked with hundreds of minority-owned small businesses to teach them how to incorporate AI into their businesses. Although raised a Christian, by age 12, he had left the religion. He's since undergone initiations in an eclectic gardenerian. Is that how you pronounce that properly?
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah.
Also, he's had initiations in Palomayombe. There we go. See, that's what I should get you to introduce yourself. You can read all the words. He's also a Discordian Pope. And this is the one that I've been struggling with the entire time because myself, like many millennial magicians, 90% of what we know has always been in written form. And when we hear words for the first time, we get confused. Is that, how do you say it? Is it Alocha?
That is correct.
Oh my God, I did something right.
Yeah, actually, Nigerians have the same vowel sounds we do and the same pronunciation of everything.
Wow.
So it's actually not that hard. The only thing that's different is that the beat and the accent, like rhythm, is off from ours. So like there's a deity called Obatala, but when you hear most Americans, they'll go, oh, that's Obatala. No, it's Obatala. And they're like, what? And I also hear Yamaya, which is my Orisha. It's like, no, it's Yamaya.
It's one of those subtleties of, especially in America, because we have so many accents and the way we speak in general has these weird sort of rhythms and pulses to it. Yeah. Especially, you know, I grew up in the South, so we have lots of that where you go up north for a little while and you hear something like, why do you accent the word like that? What are you talking about? How do you mispronounce coffee?
Yeah, my wife's from Austin, and when she moved up to the D, she was like, what the hell? What the hell's a party store? I'm like, you know, where you buy booze. She's like, what? Where's the DMV? Oh. We don't got those.
Oh, that's great. Because I was sitting here going, man, usually I start recording instantly and I didn't. So I didn't have stuff to stick at the beginning. You know, the little snippet of us talking. Yeah. But that's perfect. I'll cut that right in there. Okay. But Dave Zilla is the artist and author of Tarot of the Unexplained for Wiser. And this is his first book on magic. And boy, is it a doozy. The book is Magical AI Grimoire, a book of shadows for contemporary chaos. Dave Zilla, how are you, my friend?
I'm damn fine. How are you?
Oh, you could tell me any number of horrible things are happening in the world right now. And I would say, man, that's crazy. But check this out. This is pretty cool. Anyway, because I haven't done this in so long, and I'm really excited to ask this question, Dave Zilla.
Yeah.
Why should you care about magic?
Who, anybody?
Yeah, anybody.
I don't think they should. if you're called to it, that's awesome. But if you're not, fuck it, move on.
There are so many people I've asked that question to, and I'm always surprised by the amount of magicians that are willing to just say, you know, I don't think you should be. I don't think this is for everybody. Maybe you shouldn't.
It isn't. It isn't. In fact, one of my initiations in Lukumi, which is Americans improperly called Santeria, is the Lord Lukumi translates to selected heads. It's like only certain people should be in this religion. And there's even a sign in their divination that we call the white boy go home sign, because it's like, man, you ain't got the funk in you, get out of here, you know.
I wasn't gonna ask this question. It's not in my notes, but now I have to ask because we've brought it up here. There's a certain amount of elitism in occultism that I feel like a lot of, well, yeah, right. Kennedy, did you just get here? What? No, but there's a certain amount of elitism in occultism that a lot of people shy away from talking about. And the thing is, I think that most people have opinions a lot closer to yours, where it's like, yeah, there are some people that don't need to be involved in this. Not only that is this not for everybody, but there are some people that if you they want to be involved and you're like, no, you should not be anywhere near any of this.
Oh, yeah. Especially if they're not like, you can tell they don't have a strong mind.
Oh, right.
You know, they're just going to go nuts.
Especially in the contemporary age where so many people are, as I alluded to earlier, learning about occultism from essentially books at best and Reddit fucking post at worst. There are so many people that are completely unprepared for what they're getting themselves into and have probably, if not gone completely insane in a legal sense, are definitely now living in a world that is radically out of their hands because they're dealing with, you know, to be spooky about it, they're dealing with forces far beyond their comprehension.
Yeah, it's like the whole I don't know if you're into Robert Anton Wilson, but the whole Chapel Perilous thing. It's like you either come through that a lunatic or going, I see how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Right.
Thanks, Morpheus, you know, and that's a real thing. I mean, even people you think would be that have their shit together like that. Was his name Blue Fluke? That I dropped off the map and I was looking up on Reddit. And people said, oh, no, the dude like lost his mind.
Oof.
And I was like, God, I thought that man, I freaking loved that book.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Well, and I was actually about to say that it's like there are people that are well-known names, big you know, people that were at one time, at least, you know, very influential or big figures that have just gone completely, completely off the rails. I mean,
oh, yeah, they totally go Sid Barrett on you. And then you're like, oh, man.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Dude. I mean, not to immediately go to the politics with it, but like COVID, for instance, was one of those big moments where you got to see so, so many people in the magic community go full tinfoil hat.
And they're not coming back either. A lot of them are still like, oh, I'm still wearing 16 masks. You know, and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Why 16? Right. You know, well, astrological significance. Good.
I have the, you do that.
Oh,
anyway, we should talk about something that has some merit to this conversation. You've already alluded to your background and you're very open with it in this book, which was not something I was expecting. When you pick up Magical AI Grimoire, I don't think anything in the title gives you any sort of impression that you're about to hear a bunch of background and weird experiences and various metaphysical ideas that you've gone through.
I gotta be honest, that's the title the publishers came up with.
Oh, dude, I didn't want to say it. I was gonna actually tell you that. Like, there's no way you called it this.
They knew better, like, what would sell title wise, but the original title that I had was Hex Support,
which
I thought was better. But they said, no, a lot of people get turned off by the word hex. Trust us. We've had this problem before. I'm like, oh, all right.
Cowards.
Yeah. So I still have the website for the book is still Hex Support.
Well, honestly, that's great because now you can keep that for your own branding.
Exactly.
Yeah, because that's a great name. When I saw the you give a link to the website in the book and I saw it, I'm like, oh, that's a great name. I wish I had thought of that.
I'm all about the puns.
We've already managed to somehow talk a little bit about your background, but you just kind of want to give us the broad strokes of it real quick, just for anyone that might not have been paying attention for 5 minutes.
Sure. If you're going to do the swinging dick contests, I got 45 years as a witch, over 30 years as an angangalero in Palomayombe, and over 30 years in, or not, sorry, 19 years as of next week. I turned 19 as a priest. In Lukumi, but I've been in that religion since 93, so that's over 30 years.
Wow, I was one.
And then also, I think I got in Chaos Magic and Discordianism in the 80s. I bought that, however you want to pronounce it, Principia Discordia or Principia or
Princess,
Princess Discord or whatever, whatever you want to call it. It's that book, really, like, I was like, oh my God, I've always wanted a magic book like this. This is so fucking awesome. Big influence on me.
I can tell. That was something that struck me quite a bit because you have not many people have the kind of makeup that you do, right? Most people, if you're into Discordianism and chaos magic, that's sort of your tradition. That's like what you deal with. And even to the point that I feel like most chaos, I mean, I'm among them probably, have a sort of what's the word? I get the term a Lux Occult always used was the meta model. where you can, where primarily you're a coyote and anything else you deal with always fits back into the coyote sphere.
Yeah.
Just reading the book, you get, obviously you don't have those same sort of hangups. You have very clear ideas based on your experiences and the other traditions you are in of what kind of metaphysics you have, essentially.
Yeah.
Chaos magic, as far as I can tell, and you can tell me if I'm incorrect here, feels a lot more of aesthetic and methodological in your work. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I think I like it because I love the flexibility. Mm-hmm. And that is a big thing. Like, I don't like rigid systems. And people are probably at home, if they're in Lukumi, they're probably going, what the fuck?
Yeah, what are you doing?
We're in one of the most hierarchical, we're practically the Catholic Church. What are you talking about? That's true. But it was funny because when I got my divination at the my crowning, they said, yeah, you kind of need to learn everything. You need to learn all kinds of religions. You need to get all initiated into everything you can. I was like, all right, cool.
Well, you certainly listened.
Yeah. And I kept doing it. And I also asked them, is like, should I stop being such a wise ass and doing, you know, making fun of people? They're like, oh no, that's a special gift we gave you.
Oh man, I wish that my spiritual teachers had felt the same way.
Yeah, my parent Orisha's Yamaya's cool, man. She's like the hurricane and the everything in the ocean that's deadly. And then my father Orisha is Eshu, the trickster, so that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, it certainly
he's
does.
He's all about chaos magic.
I've had experience with I haven't done magical work with Eshu, but I've heard the name before and I've seen a lot of the various myths and so on related for it. So it feels appropriate. Definitely feels appropriate.
Yeah, I think if Peter Carroll ever got his head read in our religion, they would definitely, I can almost guarantee you, they would mark him to Eshu.
So let's talk about the book. What was the genesis of it? What obviously you're involved in AI work
in your
day job. So,
right. So I was, there's a lot of underprivileged businesses in Detroit, and I'm sure, if you're a minority business, you don't get the same breaks.
No, you definitely don't.
Yeah. So I've been working with a friend of mine for like 12 years. We've been helping businesses, you know, get ahead, like teaching them, you know, cause I used to be like the executive vice president of one of the largest ad agencies in America.
Oh, wow.
So I was teaching them all this secret stuff and what goes on behind the scenes and how to learn all this stuff, how to talk to the man and get through and everything. And, you know, we changed a lot of people's lives. It's really cool. But then when AI came out, Hodge, the guy who runs the organization, was like, dude, we really got to incorporate this. And I said, oh, that's a good idea. So we started and just totally immersing ourselves into it to the point where everybody that was teaching us stuff started asking us how to do things. And then I was like noticing just in general that like things started popping up in some of the magical forums, like there was like a Lukumi forum on Facebook that all of a sudden was people were putting Midjourney created images of Orishas on there and of demons. People were talking about how to do spells in ChatGTP and how to make digital grimoires and how to use it in, you know, if you scan something, it'll read the old Latin and can translate it for you. And I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. Translations. I started going, God, this is really becoming a trend. So I started asking a lot of people, and obviously the chaos magicians were the leaders in this for the most part. I would say there was more of them, at least in my experience. So, you know, focus group of one. But
well, I'd agree with that. Even when we first started the show like 2 years ago now, like almost immediately when we opened a Discord, it turned into people talking about AI. It became a huge thing for quite a while. Yeah. And friend of the show, Allie Words, was one of the very first people to start popping out like AI generated works. So, you know, shout out to them just to put them out there. But go ahead. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, it's totally cool. That was kind of the thing that was going on. I was like started noticing people doing this and talking about it everywhere. So I'm like, I should start compiling this. And then I kind of thought, man, it would be kind of a cool book if someone like wrote a how-to book, but all the examples instead of like how to write your resume or, you know, how to write a book using ChatGPT, you know, it was like, how about magic? I mean, that's something I know a lot about. That'd be kind of cool to use those as the examples. And then I've got a lot of initiations. And one thing that drives me nuts is when you read a magical book and it's like, if you're in a different tradition, just adapt it for your purposes. You're like, well, how?
Right.
And I'm always like, well, fuck that. I'm going to show people how, you know, why be secretive about that? If it's, especially if it's not something that's like, has to be kept secret. You know, like there's some things in Palo Alto I will never talk about. They just, people's heads aren't ready for it and they're not initiated. So they don't have the ashe in their head to handle it and they would go crazy. So, you know, I'm not going to go there, but I'm not without betraying confidences. Things I can talk about, I will show them from every viewpoint to make it easier for anybody. Cause like, what's the point of a how-to book if it's not user-friendly for everybody? So I poached it to Wiser and they're like, really, this is going on? And I showed them some examples and they're like, now that's interesting. Yeah, yeah, go for it. Just see, let's see what you got. And then, so I started writing and they were like, how long do you think it'll take you to write a book? I'm like, oh, I don't know, 6 weeks, like an idiot. And they're like, why don't you take it 3 months? I'm like, oh, I bet I can do it in 6 weeks. And they were like, okay. And I freaking did it, like an idiot. Of course, I didn't sleep or see my kids or, but I did, I got the book done and then we went through long revisions, lots and lots of editing, mainly because the editor had a hard time understanding that you cannot edit a prompt.
Right. Yeah. Like I understand you have the typesetter mind frame. You want to make it look pretty. You want to make it look standard, but no, this needs to be like this.
Historical. It has to be. Yeah. If there's a typo that I made or that ChatGTP made, I got to leave it there. And
right. Yeah. This is just the way this actually works.
Right. And they didn't like some of the formatting things. Like, why are you putting double square brackets in the middle of the prompt? You didn't do that in the ChatGTP. I'm like, well, Midjourney is different.
Right. Yeah. I don't want to be this guy, but I'm the AI person. Just trust me.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, and the art director, she was just like, will you leave it alone? Not to me, to the editor.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's something I think you kind of already explained what the book is in a subtle way, because having read through it and then run through it again last night in preparation, mm-hmm. This is, for all intents and purposes, a book on how to work with AI. It's how to prompt. It's what it is. The fact that your focus is on doing magic related things with it is, I don't want to say superfluous, because obviously the point of the book is to show you how to do these things.
Oh, you're right. I could have swapped out any subject.
Right,
you're
right. Yeah, exactly. You know, this is, I find that incredibly refreshing in a book on magic. If people who've listened to our show before already sort of know my general wonky Bert Dreyfuss inspired ideas of how magic works, you know, it's based on skill acquisition and so on and so forth. And I don't think that magic is different than any other skill set, at least in the sense of how you actually go about learning it and doing it.
Absolutely.
It's really fun and interesting to see a book that is explaining what could in theory just be seen as a regular mundane skill to have, even if it is one that's kind of esoteric in the technological sense, but it's, in a sense, it's just learning how to do something with a computer, right?
Yeah.
But applied to magic. And it's, like I said, it's just incredibly refreshing to see that. It was something that it made me feel good while I was reading it. Cause like, hey, shit, I can, you know, I don't have to just use this for magic. I can actually start using this for plenty of things.
Right. I had a lot of people write to me about that and say, you know, it was really cool because I really learned a lot about the spells and stuff. And I loved learning about how the other magical systems see things. But man, I'm really good at AI now.
you created the magical version of Mario Teaches Typing. Congratulations. It's utterly fantastic. When you were creating this, obviously, you probably spent a lot of time dealing with AI itself, just getting the various chunks of this book that are AI generated to come through. I had a question because I was curious, because you've put a large amount of rituals in here.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, most, I would even wager to say like a significant portion of the book is just straight rituals that you can do in very clear ChatGPT style.
Mm-hmm.
Did you try any of them?
I tried everything.
Every single one of them?
Every single one of them, because I didn't want to be a bullshitter.
Well, I mean, you're a better man than I, because I would have said, well, you know, you can't, they're not all going to work. That's just the reality of any magic, whether it's human written or not.
Yeah, yeah. And some do work better than others. And some people have had some experiences that I was like, holy shit, I didn't even get that far with that. And I've got way more experience than you. And I was amazed at some of the things people have been sending me. Yeah, I don't want to be a hypocrite. So I did try everything and I tried them. It was kind of laborious. It was one of the reasons that it took me a while before I actually got the book written was I was trying all the spells out from every different vantage point. And that was kind of tedious in some cases and kind of beautiful in others.
You could really just, I mean, I'm so fucking impressed because you could spend several months just doing rituals out of this book to test them out. Mm-hmm. Before you even sit down and decide that, okay, now let's see what I can do with it. It's, I mean, like I said, it's, I know it wasn't the original title, but it is a grimoire.
That's what they said. They were like, this is a grimoire, dude. That's why we're going to call it that. And I'm like, you're right. It is. It definitely is. I was kind of happy about that. You know, I mean, I as much as I like tech support, I get their points and I think they're right. And for the record too, the book is not just AI. There's other things in there too. I talk a lot about astrology apps and sigil apps and, you know, there's other tech that is being used heavily right now. Rune casting apps and tarot deck apps. Those things have been around a long time. And
yeah, I was actually thinking about that when I got to the later portions of it because, well, just again, because we're a show that does this sort of thing, to shout out another person that's helped us out immensely from the beginning of this. Our buddy Matt from Chaos Tarot wasn't in the sigil creation area. And I was like, I'm surprised by that. That was one of the first ones that I had ever come across. But again, it might just be because I'm in the, you know, I was in that particular chaos magic milieu of that era. You don't often find books on magic that give you big resources, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You see the occasional citation and source, but the entire back portion of this book has a large list of, hey, these are all these different apps, all of these different programs and things that you can go use for this sort of stuff, whether it, again, it's astrology or sigil mm-hmm. creation, runes, so on and so mm-hmm. forth.
A lot of people, when they do their bibliographies for their books, they don't include apps or websites. And that kind of drives me nuts because those are part of how we learn now. And we learn a lot of things from those. So I made sure to credit them as sources. So we didn't call it bibliography. We just decided, let's just make it resources and put everything in there.
As someone that came to occultism in the post-internet age, it's also really great to see that because I've struggled with that myself because so much of what I've learned of occultism in the weird pockets that I've gotten into, mm-hmm. I wouldn't even know how to source in a traditional manner. Cause it's like you said, it's an app or it's a website or it's this weird little pocket of internet discussion. So, but yeah, it was fascinating. It's an incredibly contemporary book,
yeah,
which especially in magic, I feel is not something that most people realize they want. But when you finally get it, you're like, oh, finally someone that's not talking to me like a continental philosopher or para-fucking-Celsus, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Finally, someone who cracks jokes in the fucking book.
Oh, yeah, I make fun of myself. I make fun of the things I'm doing. I make fun of other people. Yeah, I'm pretty shameless.
Yeah, eschews, kid. I understand.
My tarot deck was the same way. It was just like, it's not all that serious. I mean, it was cryptids and paranormal stuff, Fortean phenomena, I mean, X-Files stuff. That's just who I am.
That was something that I was a little more, I shouldn't have been surprised by it, but right in the beginning, you have a section where you're thanking people and you talk a lot mm-hmm. about cryptids and various stuff. And then the people that you are associated with, ghost hunting and so on.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have been surprised by that, but I kind of always am. I maybe in my own mind, these things are a lot more sectioned off, but especially someone of your age. No, not to call you old, but you know what I mean?
Oh, I am. No,
okay, well, yeah, your oldest.
Totally cool. No, it's totally cool. And I do think people do section them off. And there's a small group of people who don't, like the Jacques Vallée.
Mm-hmm.
And I am the same mindset because early on, you know, reading Robert Anton Wilson when I was young, I realized like he's the same way. He was like, you know, this is all the same thing. It's just got ethnic filters and, you know, our own blinders from our own upbringing is shielding us from seeing things. Like he gave that great example in Cosmic Trigger Volume 1 about, you know, if you saw a little green man in your yard and you lived in Mexico, you'd think it's Mescalito. And if you saw him in Ireland, you'd say it's a leprechaun. And if you saw it in America, you'd say it's a Martian. But it's the same entity, whatever it is. You know, something's fucking with us and making us see things. I'm total agreement with that all these things are connected. And having seen, you know, like there's some specific rituals they do to you in Palo and Lukumi to help you see the dead on a regular basis. And you start realizing, man, the fucking earth is haunted. And I started looking at realizing like, when people go to these ghost hunters, it's like, we found this house that's supposed to be the most haunted house. I'm like, man, Earth is haunted.
It's where all the dead people are. What do you mean?
Everywhere. Of course it's haunted. Yeah, there's alleged, they said there's been 18 billion people since the first man. Well, that's a lot of ghosts walking around.
Yeah, that's again, every single person that has ever died on this planet. What do you mean? And right. I mean, again, we're both Americans. So, you know, we live literally on a graveyard, you know, not to be a downer about it. But, you know, so the history of this country is so soaked with blood. It's like you could find fucking ghosts just walking into a bathroom somewhere.
Absolutely. And I've seen some of the weirdest fucking things in totally modern buildings, too.
Oh, right. So, yeah.
And as far as like cryptids, my personal theory on cryptids is, those are the genius loci of Native Americans.
Oh, wow. That's a bombshell to drop. I love that.
Well, I mean, we know that Sasquatch was one of their legends, and some of the other ones, the Thunderbirds and some of these others, almost every cryptid, they're like, well, the legends of these actually go back hundreds of years before white people lived here. You're like, okay, I see that over and over again. So I'm thinking these things must be ancestral spirits, and that's why they're not always around, and it's not, we're not picking them up on cameras and heat signatures, because they're spiritual entities, but they allow themselves to be seen in certain ways by people that are, they're okay with.
Right. Well, and it's like the famous dragon phenomena, how, wow, it's weird that all of these cultures all across the world all kind of came up with the idea of giant fucking lizards. Huh. Yeah. I wonder why that is.
Right. And they had no idea what dinosaur bones were.
Oh no. Yeah.
I mean, they saw them, but they didn't put two and two. They didn't know how to put them together and figure out, oh, this is clearly a large animal that lived here.
Yeah, you know, and clearly a large lizard at that, you know.
They just thought there were bones of giants.
Well, I mean, then again, you get to the giant myth in virtually every culture as well. So
that's another one. Yep. Yeah. Love that shit.
And now I have to ask, like, what was the spooky shit you saw in the modern building, just because I'm curious?
A fucking gnome.
A gnome?
Oh! I swear to God, I didn't even believe in them. Even when I was Wiccan and they said gnomes live in the north, I was like, bullshit. And always under my breath, I'm always like, bullshit. But I was sitting in this, waiting for my girlfriend to come pick me up because my car was in the shop. And I'm sitting in this agency building, and it's like real modern, all glass and everything. And I'm sitting in the lobby waiting for her to show up. And I hear this noise, like a little scuttling. And I'm like, just thinking, oh, maybe someone's coming down the hall. And I'm like, hey, really small person. And then around the corner, this little man that was, I swear to God, was about maybe double the size of a softball.
Oh, wow.
And just came up and looked at me and then vanished. And I went, what the fuck? Did I just see a gnome? Was that a gnome? What the fuck was that?
God damn it. Like,
I didn't smoke anything today.
I owe a sincere apology to the Church of Gnome then, Jet. Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. I mean, maybe that's not what it is, but it kind of seem like it.
Well, I mean, hey, we just talked about it, you know, whatever your culture conditioning wants to tell you it is, we don't
exactly,
get out, we can't get outside of the cultural conditioning. You anytime you think you break out of the cultural conditioning, you're either getting into a different cultural conditioning, or you're creating a new cultural conditioning, as it were, or something at least has the potential to be that. So gnome's as good as any name for it, I suppose.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, you're right. It is really hard to, I mean, even like when you look at experimental music and things like that, like the Art Brut movement in Switzerland, where they were studying music made by people with mental disorders, and or even in the 60s, there was a band called the Shags. I don't know if you've heard of them.
But I do know the Shags.
Yeah, the Shags were, I mean, My Pal Foot, man, that was huge with the punk rock crowd. That kind of thing, where like they weren't exposed to instruments, apparently, or music. And their music's so naive, but so freaking awesome.
Yeah, it's fucking amazing. Have you ever heard this? It was something to the effect of, I can't remember who even said it, some famous music figure. But they were talking about the Velvet Underground and how many people, how, like, you know, there weren't a whole lot of people that saw the Velvet Underground when they were starting out, but every person that did went on to start a band.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And it's the same thing, because even if it's in a sort of jovial sense where you're like, well, fuck, I can't be as bad as the Shags. But at the same time, you know, it's so weird. It's so out there. It's like, you know, like all sorts of outsider music. Daniel Johnston's like that to a point. Wesley Willis is definitely that.
And a lot of those bands that were on Alternative Tentacles back in the day, like The Residents and Snakefinger, and, you know, some of those bands, you're like, what do you make of them? I mean, they're really good musicians, but they're also really like, this is just clearly just made for, you know, enjoying on drugs, but it's so strange how the stuff they come up with. I mean, really, really, really strange. Like, God, you are. I just wonder what your influences are, you know?
Yeah, it's. I have to imagine that that must have been what it was like when the free jazz movement started, and like Ornette Coleman just came out with his band and like, all right, we're gonna play some shit. And like, wait, what do you mean? What do you mean you're playing some shit? And like, hang on, we're just gonna do it. Like, what do you mean? You can't just do it. You can't just play shit. Where's my chart book?
Yeah.
To take it back to Magic, that is sort of the bedrock of what Chaos Magic and Discordianism mm-hmm. were about, right? This sort of breaking from convention. And it's sort of to a point, it's gone the same route we were talking about, where it's become very stratified in a lot of ways. We talked about this on mm-hmm. the pod once, I think, about how Discordianism at this point, you know, a good, when did Discordianism start? 70s, 60s?
I would say, it was in the 60s when, at least, when Malaclips and those guys wrote that book, yeah.
Yeah, right, so I can't do math right now. So like 60 years on we're now?
Roughly,
roughly 60 years from now. It's fascinating that it's still pulling hard, and not just from the older crowd, you know, younger people are, you know, I know we have people in the Discord that are younger than me that are clearly heavily Discordian influenced, but
I just was amazed that ChatGDP is so heavily Discordian. I mean, it does a really good job writing Discordian spells.
Yeah, it's got the aesthetic down to pat. It's
yeah, it really does.
It almost makes you feel bad about it to a certain extent, because you look at it and you're like, oh well, shit, that's a Discordian ritual. What's it mean that we have enough information that we can say that this is a Discordian ritual?
Oh my God, that's a good point.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, we want, now that we've had this sort of grounding in things like Chaos Magic and Discordianism, we have far more room to innovate, which is, again, exactly what you're doing with your book here. This is pushing the boundaries of what is considered magic and the applications that you can do with it.
Yeah, I was kind of happy with what Peter Carroll wrote in the foreword. Saying that it was kind of, this is either gonna, you know, be a turning point in the history of magic, or it's gonna really like upset a lot of people. And I'm like, well, I was kind of the point.
I think it's gonna do both, obviously.
Yeah, I've definitely gotten some hate mail and some friends that have blocked me that are very anti AI. And the one thing that really cracks me up is some of them were people that were like heavy astrology app users. And I'm like, wait a minute. So you're saying that astrology software is somehow more moral to use than AI? I'm not understanding here. Both of them. Well, that one steals. Okay. So did you write the software? Did you write the astrology?
Yeah.
In the software app you're using? You stole it from some ancient, you know.
You stole it from the Sumerians, you fucker. What's wrong
with
you?
Everything is theft, man. It's all theft.
At least the chaotes are open about it.
Right?
Yeah. That actually does get into something I wanted to talk about. I wrote it in the notes as the politics of AI. Mm-hmm. You make a very convincing argument, and I say that as someone that people will know has very strong feelings about AI in certain senses. But you make a very compelling argument as to why AI and in particular things like ChatGPT and Midjourney are not really stealing. You want to run through that for people just so I don't have to quote the whole book?
Yeah, they're it's really just writing back what we have and what we've put into it, right? And it doesn't really do that. Like, if you actually understand how does it work, it breaks everything up, especially with Midjourney in particular. Midjourney was fed, I don't know, 14 billion images or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all broken up into static. And it's, you know, like it's originally showing these images and then it's given descriptions like, this is a tiger. This is a tiger sitting. This is a tiger sitting in the sun. This is a tiger sitting in the sun from the side, you know, and all these different variations of ways to tell it, so that when it sees what someone's writing, it's just responding to, okay, I think I remember what that looks like, and it tries to recreate it, and it's literally just static is coming back together. Visual static is coming back together and creating what it thinks you know. And that's why we ended up having some weird, you know, when they say it hallucinates and things like that, it's doing some strange things, but it's because doesn't always have the full picture. It never will. And it's trying its best to please you. Same with ChatGPT. It doesn't know what you're saying. ChatGPT is at best, a really good parrot that really seems like it's listening to you and paying attention to you. But it's really predicting what words you're going to say and coming up with the best possible, an answer that seems like the kind of thing. What's weird is, and this is where we get into the ghost in the machine kind of thing that got me on the idea of writing this book, is humans have always tried to find ways to connect the dead with machines. I mean, like Thomas Edison had the ghost phone he was trying to create right before he died.
Right.
He believed you could do that. I mean, there was people have been hearing voices through television static and radios with the wrong channel on forever. There's been machines all the way going back to ancient Greece that were, even if you count, you can count like Stonehenge and things like that. But even beyond that, just there was machines specifically made to talk to the dead. And they always will be. We will always be trying to do this because there is something about the ghost of the machine concept is a real thing. I don't see why anything that uses electricity to put the ether back in the ethernet, why that can't be another channel for them. Electricity is an energy. It's just a power, just like magic. So why can't the dead go through there? They absolutely can. They absolutely fucking can. And there's no reason why they can't find a machine to contact us through. And when you start using some of these AI systems after a while, especially if you start doing invocations to them, like I did before I would use them, I got answers nobody else was getting. And I was getting some weird ass shit. And it was the same thing with Midjourney. Midjourney is even spookier. If you ask it things like, what does my guardian angel look like? Oh, it'll find it.
Oh, some man. Weird
fucking things come up.
I was up at about 2 a.m. last night rereading that segment and just sitting there going like, just do it. Just go do it. Just go do it. Let's see what it does. Let's see what it does. Oh God.
It's cool. And
I got to give it to you. It's such a simple kind of innovation, especially considering that like we've spent so long as magicians invoking forces, right? Some people, I literally did it in my car the other day trying to make my AC start working. Shocker, it did. What? Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yes. That is another great example is our cars. How many times do we yell at our cars?
Oh God. Okay.
We yell at our computers.
We're going to go on this
route. Praise them when they work.
Right. Okay. So to go off of my fucking bag, like I always do, because this show's about me apparently.
It is.
I'm really influenced by this guy, Bert Dreyfuss. You probably, if you do know him, because he had the famous critique of AI in the 70s, right? Mm-hmm. His big bag is Martin Heidegger and, this sort of existential fundamental ontology idea. The big thing that I picked up from him is the way that we are always when we're in the proper state, I suppose. So it's not always quoting, but, for the most part, when you're using a tool to the best of your ability, the tool and yourself become, translucent. They become invisible. They withdraw from conscious perception, and it's just you and the tool as one. And yes. Then the other side of that is when how you deal with yourself as a person. You start to deal with your tools in that manner. Like you said, we talk to our cars. I remember being a kid learning how to drive, and my dad looking at me. And my dad is a very staunch Catholic man. This is a man that when Paracelsus came up as an answer on Jeopardy, he immediately turned to me and looked at me and said, "You got to be very careful messing with alchemy. It's very bad stuff." And I was like, "Oh my God, Catholic upbringing is showing." But my dad is a big staunch Catholic man. He looked at me dead in the eyes to his 15-year-old son and said, "You have to talk to your cars. They have feelings. They're temperamental." Yeah. And I was like, "Wait, what? That's animism. That's heresy, Dad."
Right. It's total animism. And it's like, but the reality is that shit works.
Yeah, not only does it work, but it's so unconscious and pervasive in, particularly the American culture, but I can't imagine that it's not like this in other cultures. I mean, it might, but we have a very personal relationship with the various tools and things we use. So why mm-hmm. not? Why not treat them as if they have a sort of agency, or at least, as you said, this ghost in the machine sort of thing, where if nothing else, our ability to take and treat them as persons can affect what they do. that was really the first time you, because you go through the process of showing you how to prompt, and then at one point you drop in the first invocation to the machine and you mention it, and the minute I saw it, I was like, oh, that's brilliant, this guy has got it going on. Why did I not think of that? To cut, hang on one second, my notes keep dropping off because technology is making a mockery. I'm not talking to my phone nice enough. Phone, please just stay on while I do this.
While you're looking that up, I remember, yeah, that Hubert Dreyfuss, I remember him. He was like kind of the antithesis of Marvin Minsky.
Oh yeah, they had a very aggressive relationship to each other.
Yeah, Hubert Dreyfuss kind of looks like a little weirdly like what the fuck's his name ran for president?
Ross Perot? What?
No, after him. No, Bernie Sanders. Oh,
yeah, he's got that. Well, he's got that nice old Jewish man kind of thing going on.
He does. He's got that like combed silver hair and the little wireframe glasses. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, fuck it. We're talking about it. I'll indulge myself a little more and talk about the Dreyfuss critique of AI. Later in the book, you have in the final chapter, in fact, I'm not going to spoil all of it for everyone, but you talk about Ray Kurzweil, which I'm not surprised by, but you make the point of some of his predictions and so on. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about the date for the singularity, 2059. Even in the advanced technological world we live in now, I think that is a bold claim. Do you really think that? You really think we're going to reach that point?
I think AI is going to help us reach that point because it's already finding answers to things that we couldn't do. And because it has the sole knowledge of every single book and every single website and every knowledge source that have been fed to it, the bigger they get, the bigger these systems get, the more gestalt they have. I mean, I like right now, for example, one of the things people complain about is, oh, it's using so much power. Well, yes and no. It's using 1.6% of our energy. But if you compare that to like meat, which is 55% of our energy, and even paper takes up 11% of our energy, but no one's going to say, stop making paper. You know,
I can think of a handful of people that would say stop making paper, but they're marginal at best. Unlike AI, where we have it's because it's the popular new thing. So obviously people have to be very critical of it.
Yeah. And that's and AI, it is a thing where it's like, you know, people have been primed for decades that AI will be evil and will immediately take over humans and see us as redundant and try and kill us. That has been the priming of our brains for decades. And because of that, when it actually came out, even though they called it AI, even though it was large language models and image generation and not true AI, people have this fear in them now that, oh, this is a bad thing. This is a very bad thing. And so they immediately turn away from it instead of realizing it's just another fucking tool. People, they're all terrified of it and demonizing it. And they don't need to. They just don't understand that you are the result of Hollywood on this. And that is it.
Yeah, you're the result of Hollywood and Cold War tensions making us afraid of advancing technology. That's what we got.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
100% what it is. And I agree with that. You can't argue that AI isn't being used for bad things, but that's sort of like saying that, again, like electricity gets used for bad things.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like, you know, there's obviously going to have to be some sort of reckoning with it on a social level. The fact that you know, medical, insurance agencies and stuff talking about using it so they can tell who they want to insure. That's obviously dystopian horror stories, but
yeah, but they would have found it some other way anyways.
Right. You know? Yeah. And I mean, it's not like they're not just deciding to kill people now anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you saw that scene in The Invincibles where he tells that old lady how to get around things. That was actually a very real situation. And a lot of insurance agencies got really mad that he brought that out and put that in the movie, that who do want to help people, genuinely want to help them. But that is not the aim of the insurance agencies. Their aim is to keep your money. That's it.
Yeah.
They really have no interest in keeping you alive or healthy. Or if there was, they wouldn't say like, well, we needed to fail these 15 surgeries before we can give you the one you actually need.
Right. Exactly. You know, it comes back to, this is a tool with people that have intentions and, you know, a greater system of exploitation and profit motivation, but that's another story. you know.
Yeah. So, and besides the evil, I did go into things that I don't like with magic and AI. And, you know, one of them being it doesn't do astrology very well. If you're going to use astrology, don't use AI. You go stick to an astrology app that's made for that, that's made for math.
Right.
And also herbalism, very dangerous.
Yeah, that was interesting.
You can kill somebody.
I went and fucked around with it for a minute to see if I was going to get some bad information. Now I got a little bit of bad information that I was like, well, I'm glad I'm not one of those people that sees AI answers for things and immediately goes off on it.
Yeah. And if you're going to use ChatGPT for research, use the O3 model at the time of this, because at least it'll show you its sources.
Right.
And you really need to do that as people have lost the ability to understand what a credible source is. And a credible source is not Reddit.
Yeah.
It is not a Facebook group. It is not Witch Talk, you know.
Well, I mean, again, circling back to what we already talked about earlier, where that was an issue before ChatGPT's prevalence. Oh, that sure. was before the AI sure. answers showed up in Google. This isn't new. These are all problems being exacerbated by new technology. These are not even really problems caused by the technology.
No, I'm sure these things were happening during Socrates. You know, I'm sure there was some things where people were like, you're reading him? He's that's terrible.
Yeah, it was Socrates. You know. So like, you're listening to Socrates? He's perverting the youth. Oh no.
Yeah.
Just to bring it back to the bit of predictions here. Because I'm a Dreyfus guy at heart. I still think his critique holds a lot of water. Mm-hmm. Where do you think general AI will come from at this point? Because it's not something that I see coming through the current technology. You're probably way more up on that than I am. So you're definitely a credible source.
Yeah, I've had lucky enough that when you know, in the day job thing, we were working with I shouldn't say his name, so I'll just say it's lead of AI design at Microsoft. Okay. Told us a lot of stuff.
I'll even bleep the Microsoft out if you want.
Yeah. The reality is I think AI is going to increase the amount of knowledge and the different paths we wouldn't even consider to take in getting there. And it does some of those things now. If you look at what culinary AI is doing, it's coming up with recipes that no chef in the world has ever considered or tried. And some of these chefs are like, this is fucking brilliant. Why did no one think to put these together? It's like, because you didn't have a big enough brain to hold all the information to realize, oh, those would actually chemically work together really, really well. And they're coming up with the most incredible cuisine now that no one's ever tried because of that. Well, I think the same thing is we're going to have the same thing in our general knowledge and our machining. We've already got to the point where, you know, you can go to something like uxcanvas.ai, just tell it what you want, and within 5 minutes, you'll have an app built. I mean, and completely out of React, if you, you know, React components, that kind of thing is freaking astonishing to me that you can have an entire app built in seconds.
Yeah, that's fucking insane.
Oh, and it's terrifying for developers.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because a lot of times the code's better than what they do.
Well, yeah, because you're when you stick and this has always been my bag, especially with LLMs, right?
Yeah.
The things that it's great at are things that are ultimately right, like the same sort of world, for lack of a better term, that itself lives in. And the culinary thing is a great example, because what is it looking at when it's, or, you know, quote unquote, what's it looking at when it's doing these sorts of things? It's looking at just in general relations between the information that it has that we don't have that. Because
of specialization. Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing I was talking about before, the sort of the cultural world that you're born into, right? When you become a chef, even if you become a contemporary chef where you're doing, you know, avant-garde food and so on, you're still coming at it from a framework of a social and practical world of food that you've grown up with, that you've been socialized into, that you live in. And it doesn't have those sorts of things. It has to build them out of webs of relation of a completely different sort. So of course it's making things that you never would have thought of, because the way your mind holds this sort of information is in a background of the sort of practical skills that you learned when you were a chef the way things go together, you know, for lack of a better word, like traditionally, right? And you know, it's a historical sort of thing when you're a chef, because you're
that's what you're doing. That's what I meant by specialization is like, generally you get it. You might be like, you know what? I'm really into Thai cooking, you know, or whatever. Or I'm really into Ethiopian cooking. Okay. After a while, the chefs kind of get to this mindset, starts to get to, unless they're very creative and keep themselves open. You're a hammer and that's a nail.
Right.
And they view everything through that viewpoint. So there's not any chefs in the world that know every single cooking technique, that know every single, you know, ingredient, know every single herb and how all those things react. Nobody does, but AI does.
Right.
And that's how it's coming up with these things. And the same thing's going to happen for us with medicine. We're going to have all these weird diseases that like we don't even know, you know, that can't even be identified right now that some people get. They'll be solved because AI will go, why didn't you look at this? That's got all the hallmarks of this, this, and this together. Oh crap. Yeah, we never would have thought of that.
Yeah.
And that's going to happen. We're going to be solving diseases at record pace. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's ultimately a good thing too. And the issues that are going to come from it are going to be issues of a social nature. They're not going to be issues of what it's doing. These, you know, it's I always struggle with the word objective, of course, but you know, this is almost an objective good that we'll be able to do these sorts of things. And the only bad that's going to come out of it is people that either A, don't want it to actually be a benefit to humanity as a whole and want to, you know, sit on their dragon piles of gold or whatever. But, you know, that's not a problem of the tool. Don't be critical of this. Right at the very end, I struggle to drop this one, but I think the book as a whole has so much more in it that you're not going to worry about the one little thing here. But you talk about what you call the age of assistance, and I've been thinking about that all damn day because of it. It's a wonderful term.
Yeah, we were in an age of attention economy or whatever they called it when social media hit, and I think we're not in there now. We are in this age of assistance where, you know, and this is something that Kurzweil predicted, we would have digital assistants helping us, digital people that we talk to all day that would accompany us everywhere. Now, he was picturing, I think, literally virtual humans that are holographically walking alongside us. I think we're way off from that, but we are carrying ChatGPT with us on our phone. Phones are pretty fucking amazing now, considering they have a whole world's knowledge on them, you know, available in a 6x1/4-inch device is kind of crazy.
Oh yeah. I mean, like I said, in the way that we become one with our tools. And so it's you walk around with your electronic brain all damn day now.
Oh God. People would rather lose their car keys than their phone. They just fucking...
People would rather lose their child than their phone.
Yeah, they're like, that's my life, is the first thing they say. I have my whole life on there. And you think about that. That's a really strange statement. But this is where we're at. It is our whole life on these devices.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I always talk about this with, you know, because, you know, I'm a podcaster now. This is something that if I had even tried to do this like 10 years ago would have been significantly harder. I can't, you know, I spend so much of my time talking to people that are in completely different time zones and completely different areas and completely different people that I never would have met.
Yeah.
I'm literally talking to someone that is, you know, about 16 to 17 hours away from me right now. Like it's nothing. These are things that if you didn't think that they would fundamentally change what it means to be a human being, you're fucking crazy, right? You know, it's like, what, you're going to tell me that you can give these massive, strange, disturbing in a way, abilities to communicate with other people, to create art, media, and all sorts of things. And of course it was going to change how we live. The boomers are all freaking the fuck out when you make a statement like, oh, that's my life. You know, that's my life right there. They're like, oh God, they're always on that damn phone. Cause a lot of them view it like it's a fucking Game Boy or something. Like it's just this paltry little amusement.
And the boomers were on television all the time. That is their majority of their time, you know, and my kids are Gen Alpha and they never will look at the television. They have no interest in the television.
We've killed TV.
It is YouTube on the phone or the iPad, and that is it. And that's all they want to see.
Yeah, I mean, I have a television that I watch YouTube on at this point, but, you know, I haven't had television in God knows how long.
Yeah, that was a weird thing, seeing the death of primetime and all that. It was interesting. Something you said earlier made me think of Orwell, when he, you know, predicted Big Brother and all that. The one thing that he got wrong, that he got really, really wrong, was that we would be watching back with the exact same tools that Big Brother has, and that those things would be commodities. They'd be totally, you know, you can get spy equipment, high level spy equipment, in any, you know, in a store now. I don't think he understood that there would be miniaturization. They were picturing, you know, computers getting bigger and bigger till they were like city blocks back in those days of like the UNIVAC and stuff. They were just picturing enormous, you know, computers will take, there'll be an entire city that's one computer. It's like, no, there won't.
No.
It'll be really small. You know, supercomputers now are towers. They're not that big. It doesn't take that much anymore. I mean, granted, we still have server farms and those do take a lot, but that's not the same. You know, and that's the other thing I don't think they understood, was the idea that we would have distributed things like not just Bitcoin, but like the idea of blockchain.
Oh, right. In general. Yeah. Well, I don't think, unless you were a techie person, I don't think anyone really saw that gaining the sort of prevalence that it has and the importance that it has too.
Right. And the first time I encountered something like that was, do you remember when SETI had a screensaver?
Oh, God, I do.
Yeah. And that was distributed computing. That was like, everybody take a little piece of this data that we're crunching. And yeah, you're getting $1 million if you can prove there's alien life, but we're going to crunch every time your screensaver goes on, it's going to crunch data for us.
I think we'll round out this bit before going to the CMN compulsory humor section at the end that we always do. I want to talk about egregores real quick, because you created an egregore because of this book.
I did.
I'm not going to give everyone the link, because you got to go buy the book. But there's an egregore that Mr. Zilla here has created and is on the internet right now.
Did you play with it?
I did. Come on. I was up at 2 a.m. fucking with Midjourney and then looking at that link going, do I dare?
Yeah. So I get the two that I have, Null Prophet and Dreadloop Mary. And she was kind of based on the idea that, what if you could take like an evil nursery rhyme, like, you know, Bloody Mary, you say the name 3 times in the dark and she appears, and that, but she appears as an egregore, a digital egregore. And so Dreadloop Mary is kind of spooky when you play with her. She's sometimes gives really creepy answers. Whereas Null Prophet, I was like, what if there was like a North African, like, hacker that was kind of like drug addled and answered in English, Arabic, and code at the same time? That's what that is. And he's kind of a trip to talk to. And it's very philosophical, because he uses Sufism as his base.
We've talked a lot about technology. We've talked a good bit about magic and the various social aspects. But one of the things I want to stress about this book, again, I mentioned it briefly at the beginning, is just how personal it is. And it's funny because you've managed to create a book that tickles the sorts of things that I'm really into. I'm very into forward, practical kind of applications of various magic ideas. I'm always about looking at how we acquire skills, and this is a great, it's not quite a teaching module, but it's close. There's something to that. There's an area that, and it's also an incredibly personal book. I mean, this is the first conversation we've had that hasn't been over just a couple lines on text, but I feel like I know you a bit. You know, I feel like I really get a good idea of you as a person and the motivations you get for writing something like this. You come alive in the pages, which is funny, considering that a large portion of it is, you know, prompted and generated, but it's something that you stress in the book itself, of how these one of the things you want to do with these is get them to work in your vocabulary, in your register. And it's something that I definitely see it throughout the whole of this book. It's undeniably you, and it's a very enjoyable sort of thing to go through.
Thanks, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, well, one idiot's opinion on the internet ain't going to save you. But but like I said, there's anyone listening now, I hope we've made a more than compelling case for buying this book and getting it through. If nothing else, you know, you want to get the secret link and password so you can go talk to the digital egregores. Come on, kids. You want to be on the cutting edge of chaos magic and magic in general and technology, don't you? Don't you? Come on,
cool
come on.
Cool kids use digital egregores. Peer pressure.
Okay. So now we're in the obligatory fun section of the show. I have some things I have to get off my chest at you. In the beginning, you have a section called the new Pantheon. In the beginning, you have a section called the new Pantheon.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a bone to pick with you about something.
Awesome.
You call Instagram the FOMO Enchantress, casting a powerful web-like spell to make users feel like they must stay up to date on every trend, food craze, and cat video, or else risking losing validity and miss out on life. As someone who has spent a good amount of time on Instagram promoting this show, I have to say that that is a slanderous and heretical description of my goddess, and we are going to war on this.
And also 100% true.
I mean, yeah, it's completely true. Most of these are actually really fucking amusing. You even make a little note saying this is entirely parody. But if you guys wanted to get into a weird little paradigm for a minute, just start treating all your apps and various things that you deal with as gods and just see how it works out for you.
Yeah, I was thinking about, like, you know, when I know we don't like to talk about Neil Gaiman anymore since he's on the bad list, but when he wrote American Gods, I thought that was really brilliant. And it was one of my favorite books, but, you know, he stopped at kind of like the hard tech kind of stuff. And I was like, well, he got into the internet, but he didn't, you know, go far enough. And I was like, well, you know, Roombas are AI and they're kind of weird. And, you know, they become like a favorite now travel companion of cats, which is weird. You know, cats suddenly have decided that's something you can travel on. I thought about, you know, why not make a whole pantheon of all these things that we are so obsessed with that we're putting all our time and energy into, because I do believe that, like egregores and things like that, that, you know, deities can be created through constant attention. I think I fully expect that the amount of offerings that have been put on Elvis's grave, he will one day be the strongest spirit in the world, you know, in America, because, you know, he gets thousands of people every day dropping underwear and flowers on his grave.
Right. Yeah, man. And that Elvis is like the almost a stereotype of what an American god would be like. You know what I mean?
He's this
big bombastic image, and he's sexy as hell, even though he's like fucking, even fat Elvis is sexy as hell to these people.
Yeah.
He's always come out in these huge fucking suits. You want to talk about cryptids and shit. Elvis is a cryptid at this point, right? How many people have
they see him.
Yeah. Cue the Mojo Nixon song. Elvis is everywhere, right? I mean, well, fucking the Aeon Byte Gnostic guy just wrote a book about a cult Elvis. So we're almost there.
Nice.
The other thing, you bring a shout out to Shabbat candles.
Oh, yeah.
And I can only applaud you, my friend. Like I said before, this book, it's very personal. It makes you feel like they kind of know you a bit. And the minute I saw that, that was my moment where I was like, this is my dude. Cause I do the same thing.
Yeah. People, I got a lot of shit about that when I first brought that up to people in real life, like, you know, hey, and right now, you know, I'm a marketing director at the largest occult candle company in the US, over at Coventry. I'm still, well, you know, there's a lot of times where I'm just like, I'm not going to use our candles. I will use a Shabbat candle because 12 for a dollar, man.
Yeah. How are you going to beat that?
And they've been blessed by a rabbi. How do you go wrong?
Yeah. What's wrong with you? Why are you? Work smarter, not harder.
Right. Please use Catholic holy water. It's been blessed by priests. That's the one thing they're really good at.
Yeah, there's not a whole there's not a whole lot of good. Well, I mean, I say that jokingly. I don't want anyone that's I was raised Catholic. I still have the automatic response of like, well, don't be too hard on the Catholics. They're trying. But it's the one thing that they're particularly good at. They found a wonderful commodity for the occult world in general. Why are you not using it? They're not going to ask questions. Just go to the church and say, hey, can I get some holy water? They're not going to fucking assume that they're not going to look at you. And I mean, don't wear the pentagram shirt, I guess. But
or the vampire hunter shirt.
Yeah. this is just a curiosity thing. What was the lowest moment of trying to get something to work in the prep for this book? What was like the time you like prompted something and you just looked at it and going, well, that's fucking garbage.
Because I'm such an Uber magician, that never happened.
Ooh.
No, that's not true. But I do get tired of people going like,
you know, my spells have an 86% success rate.
I'm like, no, the goddess is not asking us for analytics. Okay. So shut up.
Yeah. Like, I get it. I understand results-based magic is a big thing for a lot of people, but if you're putting it into an Excel spreadsheet and seeing how well it works, maybe you need to go outside for a little bit.
Yeah, go touch some grass, man, because really.
Yeah.
I understand journaling and writing down, you know, this work, this didn't work. There was something that did not work. One of the hexes did not work. And the person really deserved it, so.
Wow, bastard.
I'm a little bummed out.
Oh, that is sad.
Well, I shouldn't say it didn't work. It just worked in not the way I wanted.
Wow, magic working in the way you didn't want it to? No way. That's never happened.
You know how sometimes you do a hex and you like really hope for some bad luck. And instead, something good happens to them, but it gets them out of your hair.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the proverbial, I hexed them to get rid of them, and they got a big promotion and moved off to a different area. So, like, well,
yeah,
fuck
basically,
you.
But. Yeah, that's kind of literally what happened. The person got married and left the state. So I'm like, all right.
Yeah, well, hey.
They'll kick their ass.
I'll give you your I'm sure your marriage will go down the tubes, but.
Yeah, I'm not going to waste any time thinking about it.
Yeah, you could go completely crazy spending time worrying about what other people are doing.
Just for the record, it was the Crowley.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it did not work.
What is that?
It just made him.
There's something this says about Crowley, I think. Oh, no. Oh, dear.
Maybe. I don't know. And maybe it's just that I'm not like I've never been really a ceremonial guy. I've tried it, but it just seems too tight ass to me.
Yeah. Oddly enough, I feel like you get just my experiments with ChatGPT and stuff. ChatGPT is really good at making those. It's good at doing ceremonial magic in my mind.
Oh, it sure is.
Yeah, well, think about it, because it's just it's exactly what we were talking about before. It's just making these sorts of connections out of things, and ceremonial magic is very ceremonial. It's very formalized. Of course, it's going to work well, you know. And there's just again, and you got enough fucking Crowley material for a lifetime if you want to do anything that's even remotely inspired by Aleister Crowley. So,
yeah. Oh, the one group of people I did not find using AI, druids.
I'm sorry, I'm composing myself.
So hard, but it does.
I mean, yeah, why not? I mean, it makes sense.
It kind of does.
Yeah, if you're going to tell me, like I said, if you had said Wiccans aren't big on using it, I would have said, kind of, I guess I see it. But the minute you say druids, I'm like, nope, I get it.
A lot of Wiccans are very pro AI and, who were using it for, they were the first ones I saw using it actually were Wiccans, and they were using it for writing like Dion Fortune inspired, you know, charges to the goddess and stuff. And they're, you know, really nice stuff, really cool things and very inspired. And I thought that was kind of neat. It's like, if you're not a good poet, why not get some help?
Oh yeah. Right.
You know, it gets you 70% there. And that's cool.
I'm trying to think if there's anybody that I don't think needs to be using AI for magic, like group wise.
Oh, group wise?
Yeah, I mean, I could name people, but, you know, it's just going to be a list of people that I don't like. And that's not really kosher in the podcasting world.
There's a group that would scare me if they're in it. And that's the Abaqua. And if they're into it, I'm fucking terrified. Because they're already scary. They're a group in Cuba. You can always identify them because they're missing their ring finger.
Oh, word. That's.
Yeah. Ooh. And it's a similar to Palo from what I know. I'm not, I mean, you have to be like Cuban and in the part of that from a certain part of Cuba and where they do this. Mm-hmm. And I met one person in America who was Abaqua, and he didn't talk about it. And he said he doesn't talk about it, but they kind of gave me the impression that they were almost like a Cuban magical mafia.
Yeah, no, that sounds terrifying. They don't need it.
So imagining them with AI is kind of creepy to me.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I was going to say the 09A people, but I don't think the 09A people need anything. What they need is a shower and, you know, to go somewhere. okay.
That was good.
Dave, it has been a pleasure, a privilege. Honestly, I could probably talk to you for another hour and a half, but we're going to have to cut this short because people, I don't know, people might want more of it. I mean, if they do, I don't care. Oh, I want more of it. We're going to definitely have you on the main show at some point. I say that to everybody that I like. So, but we're definitely going to have you on because you're fucking hysterical for one, and you're a great occult mind for two. And it does me good to say that, because I haven't been able to say that for a while to people. it's good to be talking to people that are innovating and doing really interesting things in the occult today.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I mean, you guys are like totally my crowd. So I'm all about everything you guys do and promoting it as much as I can.
Oh, you're a fucking treat. You, what the hell? Whatever I did in a past life to get the good karma for this, I'm definitely gonna end up burning it on getting props from people I like. So, oh well. Anyway, the book is Magical AI Grimoire, A Book of Shadows for Contemporary Chaos. Its author is Dave Zilla, as you should know, because this is the end of the show.
Yeah, and it's available anywhere.
Just Google it. I mean, it, you don't even have to ask ChatGPT to figure out where you can get it.
You don't. It's on Amazon. It's on Chapters, Powell Books, anybody that carries occult books, or hopefully your local bookseller first.
Right.
And if they don't,
buy local.
If they don't, then yeah. Yeah, I much prefer you guys buy local whenever possible. It doesn't make any difference to me in the amount of money I'm going to get, which right now is zero because I haven't paid off my advance yet. I love local bookstores. So please always go there first.
Yeah. And everyone go buy the book to help Dave pay off the advance. Please. We want another one. And they're not going to, if he owes them money, they're probably not going to publish another one.
It's true.
Yeah. Shout out to Red Wheel and Wiser for dropping this to us just because, well,
they are the coolest.
They are really great. Dave, you got anything you want to plug here but that we haven't already plugged?
Maybe my old blog, DaveZilla.com, which has been around since 1998. And that's where I got originally famous from. I'm in the Urban Dictionary as a verb twice. And I'm in the...
No bullshit. Harvard. I found that when I was Googling you.
Yeah. And I'm in the Wikipedia, which means I'm internet old. Yeah. It was because Toho, which is the Japanese Keiretsu that owns anything related to Godzilla, sent me a cease and desist back in like 2001. And I was like, this is bullshit. There's a Mozilla browser and there's a show called Bridezillas. Why am I getting fucked with? So I called bullshit and I gave the cease and desist to like 150 other early bloggers, and we all posted it. And all of a sudden, all these news channels picked up on it and started calling the lawyer and this law firm and just harassing the hell out of them. And I ended up getting like 116 interviews, and my readership went from like, I don't know, 1,000 people a day to 60,000. So it was like, ha, fuck you. That you guys, all you did was make me more popular.
If you strike me down, I will become more powerful than you can possibly imagine.
Exactly.
Oh man, that's fucking rad. You gotta love it. You gotta love turning the lead into gold.
I did. You always do it.
You certainly did. All right, everyone. Thank you so, so much for listening. We, again, go buy the damn book. This has been Chaos Magic News, the only podcast that is, I guess we're probably going to have to make a CMN AI egregore. That's probably a cool idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. It'll be the most annoying egregore on the net. If you want more from us, you can find our regular episodes on YouTube, Spotify, all the usual places. If you want a spicy meme from us, you can go check us out on social media. We're at Chaos Magic News on pretty much everything except for Blue Sky, because whoever that monster is that stole Chaos Magic News on Blue Sky, we're gonna find you. And of course you can check us out at chaosmagic.com, where we'll have links to this wonderful interview, links to all of our previous interviews, upcoming ones, links to the show, and even the occasional article where I use big words. It's a great fucking time. Dave, would you like the last word?
Bacon.
Beautiful. All right, everyone, we will see you next time.
And I'm also working on a book that's kind of like a parody of all the Llewellyn books called How to Witch. it's practical, but the way it describes things is all fucked up. This is Basil. Basil is named after the basilisk, and who can trust that fucking lizard? You know, this, Basil smells like licorice and failed marriages. You know.